You're listening to Around Comics, episode 167.
This is Around Comics, the Comic Culture Roundtable. I'm Christopher Niesman, and I'm joined, as always, by the regular cast of characters, Mr. Tom Caters.
Hey, how's it going?
All right, Mr. Mr. Scotty Young.
I am 5 days in on my quitting of the smoking.
I've never seen anyone chew an entire pack of gum all at once. Just unwrap a whole pack of Trident and just jam it on.
He's going to destroy that toothpick.
I have been doing the nicotine gum this week, but today I only had one piece of the gum. I'm ready to kick the gum. I am, however, implementing the completely redneck toothpick.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Yes.
So who's the guy from G.I. Joe, the one that always had the toothpick?
I don't know.
Is it
Redneck Obama?
His name is probably Toothpick.
No, I want a flavored one. I want a flavored one because the flavor of wood. Dominic's wood.
Fine. Can I suggest mesquite?
Oh. They just make their own.
They have chewing sticks.
Yeah, I just haven't got out of the house this
What's
week.
A chewing stick?
It's like a longer, thicker kind of wooden toothpick.
Jesus, yeah. Seriously?
That's flavored. It's pretty much a quit.
Really? Like a pine.
Yeah, it's called an Australian chewing stick.
Shit, I need some of those.
Yeah, it's like a quit smoking aid.
Oh, it's in the asshole section.
You go to Whole
Foods,
like health food stores, or you can get them on Amazon.
All right, I need to do some of that.
Yeah, because.
I failed completely.
You failed completely.
I was doing good. I went three or four days.
Yes.
No smoking. No problem.
Then
I had one.
Yes.
Thinking, oh, I can have
I'm good.
One.
I'm
I got
a handle.
No, that's
no
that's
problem.
The end of the quitting, though.
Yeah.
I fooled myself into thinking that it was okay.
I quit, but I'm going to have one.
4 days in, he says, I've beat it. I can have one.
Right. Yeah. Right.
I'm done.
Yeah. Well, mistake.
Yeah, which rolled out Sal. He's not a quitter.
Smoking is the truly. We talked about this. It is like quitting smoking crack.
It's probably hard. I actually have known heroin addicts that have quit heroin
easier,
and cannot quit smoking.
Yeah.
Maybe you should switch to heroin.
That might help.
Because heroin seems like it would take up a lot of your time,
and I could lose weight. I could lose some weight.
I gain
weight.
You wouldn't even have time to smoke. You'd already be trying to score.
I think it's
or
a
whatever
plan.
They say. I don't know.
Yeah, whatever the kids say nowadays. I think that's the plan. No, I completely fit. I had quit smoking at one time in my life. I had quit for about 2 years, or I delayed my smoking for about 2 years. I guess I didn't quit because I wouldn't have started again, but. I quit for like 2 years, and then when I started again, it wasn't nearly as bad. I wasn't smoking it nearly as much as I had been. And so this time around, when I quit again, or tried to quit again, I should say, it was actually pretty easy, it seemed, at first. But then, like I said, I just sort of fooled myself.
You know,
I justified it in my head, thinking, oh, no big deal. I can have a cigarette now.
I can help you stop. I'm going to sit down and make you smoke a whole carton of cigarettes in one night.
I actually called.
I might die.
I called my dad to tell him. Had a little father and son moment over smoking.
Yeah.
Called my dad to tell him, and then he said, oh, you fucker. Now I'm going to have to try to quit. Which is weird when you have smoked so long that now you're inspiring your dad to quit because you're quitting. But and then we were talking about it, and it is so funny how long he's been smoking because he said, I was explaining to him how it was easier what each day or whatever, and he said, about 9 years ago, I got down to about three a day.
9 years?
For about 6 months. 9 years. And I was like, wow. Because I've been smoking for about 14 years.
It was pre-9/11.
It started it up again. That's different. When I started it. I quit for 2 years. 9/11, I smoked. I started smoking. No,
it was a different world.
You should stick with that story, actually.
Yeah,
it was really good. When he had to start smoking again after House of M. He just couldn't handle it.
The continuity, all the fucking continuity.
Stressful. But
no more mutants? Stressful. You're serious?
I wonder how many...
Did you see what Scarlet Witch did?
Spider-Man's not married anymore.
Yes, comics made me smoke.
Speaking of that, I'm sure we'll get into a lot of that conversation in a little bit.
But, I did start smoking about the same time I started reading comics, when I was like 10.
Yeah.
Tobacco is not wacko, in fact, despite what comic books tell us. Yes.
It was back whenever you could order cigarettes out of the back of the comics.
And you had sex when you were 10, too, so cigarettes do make you look cool. Yeah. I mean, come on, cigarettes do make you look cool.
Cigarettes do not make you look cool, they make you look awesome.
Oh, that's true. Yes. Depends on what sort of crowd you're hanging with. They Whatever's the best thing.
They make you look awesome, and they make you feel incredible.
Yes. Better
tomorrow
in
and better looking. Yeah, I mean everything. Yeah, more
yellow. The yellowing of your fingertips. Awesome.
And in medieval times, that was a sign of privilege.
Virility.
Oh. Yellow fingertips.
All right. So enough about the smoking.
Before we get into what we've been reading here the last really like 3 weeks, because it's been a while since we talked about it.
We're not going over everything we read in the last 3 weeks, Chris. Just so you know,
I have a few select things. Yeah. That I have pulled aside.
Chris, I have a few top of the stacks today.
Beep. And a couple of movies. Beep. And
hey, we're supposed to talk about movies.
Let me just get the ramp down, and I'll wheel down the books.
But before we get to that, I want to talk about the club. So, Sal, this is your pick this month.
Oh,
so, why don't you let people know what your picks are, and then who is so kind as to sponsor
my picks were for the CD, the music. I picked the Misfits' Static Age, their first album that didn't come out for 19 years. For the movie, I picked SLC Punk. And for the graphic novel or trade, I picked The Originals by Dave Gibbons. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
And speaking of.
And speaking of Dave Gibbons. Oh,
recording at Dark Tower.
Yes. No, we. This episode is sponsored by InStockTrades.com.
Comes next.
InStockTrades.com is offering this month's reading selection, The Originals, to Around Comics listeners. How lucky is that? For an amazing 35% off the cover price. Get your copy today for only $11.69 for the soft cover, or $16.22 for the hardcover, which is what we got. Check out the Eisner-winning graphic novel by Dave Gibbons, and then listen to our discussion. Oh, I didn't even know it was an Eisner-winning graphic novel. Listen for our discussion in early February. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need, all at great discounted prices, and remember that all orders over $50 ship for free.
Yay! Got a little care package from InStockTrades today.
Yes, you did.
I was like, ooh. Fun stuff.
Ooh. Ooh. He literally said that. Ooh, fun stuff.
What is that?
I said, Christmas.
I could just hear him. You did say that. You did say it was Christmas.
Oh, it's Christmas.
He came in
it's
very
nice
cheery.
That they have
very
a man dressed like Santa bring you your books.
Well, only
it's Cameron.
Yeah, only at...
He's a good Santa. Or whatever your religion. If you're Jewish, you'll show up.
As Janta.
Janta.
I don't know.
You don't know about Janta?
I just pick the first letter of your religion and add it to Anta.
What does Cyclops baby Jesus celebrate?
He celebrates the coming of the Christmas dragon. From its breath, he burns gifts out of trees.
Yeah. Irisica.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, forget
his claws, it. His claws are made out of mint.
God. Around Comics is recorded every Friday at 7 o'clock at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, drop by.
Like John Suntress!
Hello again, everybody.
Was in the area.
We need to get some Harry Carey. You know, it's all
catchers report in 30 days.
They do.
Chris has been talking about that for a week.
I told Sal it actually makes it warmer here when pitchers and catchers report in Florida.
No, I'm the same way.
All right, see, I'm not crazy, or John is just as crazy as I am.
So I'll go with that one.
All right.
You guys are crazy.
Well, hey, let's talk about some comics.
Yeah,
it's time for Top of the Stack.
You forgot to mention that Around Comics is recorded every Friday.
No, we literally.
Oh, you did? Really?
You never pay attention to me.
Sorry, I apologize.
It's always Tom.
Yeah, remember because he said, "Drop by, we'd love to meet you." And you said, John Suntress, and then hello again, everybody, and then why did pictures and what they report and.
Captioning is provided by Scotty Young.
Thank you for that recap. All right, I apologize. So, what time is it?
Time for Top of the Stack.
Wait, we forgot to do the Dark Tower part.
Shut up!
The movie is strip.
and
here all night.
And not like a comic strip by Mobius. All right.
top of the stack.
That's right. It's time for Top of the Stack. Our chance to let you, the listeners, know what we, the panel, have been reading for the last month or so.
No,
it's been a
not
while.
For the, well,
it has been a while. So.
Yeah, but that doesn't
it
mean...
It doesn't have to come out this week. Will you just sleep together and get it over with?
Tom.
Sexual tensions.
There's nothing sexual it's about like, the tension.
It's like being on a stage presentation of moonlighting, watching you two.
I'm Dave.
Yeah. Well, hey, just because you're as bald as Bruce Willis doesn't...
Hey, let's talk about comic books.
You brought it up.
Mr. Caters, what is your top of the stack?
I had a space-themed week this week. I read a couple of... one trade that I've had actually for a really long time, and I lost and then found again, which was First in Space by James Vining from Oni. And something I just recently picked up, Astronaut Dad.
Wow.
Written by David Hopkins with art by Brent Schoonover.
And we know Brent.
Yeah, we do. Yeah,
he's a nice guy.
It doesn't mean I have to like. That's why I like this, though.
No,
because
it could suck.
Yeah, it could suck. And now everyone we know is an RSU, I don't mention their stuff, right? I think their stuff sucks, which maybe
maybe
I do.
It does.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Both are about the space program in the late 50s, early 60s, in the race to get to space.
What is the space race you speak of?
There's the Cold War. Are you familiar? For the young people, anyone remember when we used to have enemies that had countries like the Soviet Union?
What?
You know,
Soviet Union.
Soviet Union.
You're making that up.
Yeah, I know.
What is this made-up country you talk about?
The continuity is all fucked up. But Astronaut Dyad, which is out, it's from Silent Devil. It's like a tiny little digest-sized book.
Mm-hmm. Perfect for reading on the train, I found.
Yeah, for the least amount of shame.
How about the can? Is it good for reading?
No, it's not good for that.
No?
No, I don't...
You might drop it in.
Defiles it.
Yeah, it could slip between your
It's about a family who moves to Houston, and the kid thinks that his dad is a reserve astronaut, but really his dad is like a secret astronaut. That
Ooh.
While the public program to race to, you know, race to get someone in orbit, there's a secret program of people going up and spying on the Soviet Union that isn't publicized. So his dad is actually an astronaut, but doesn't have any of like the fame or anything.
Kind of
like
a spy too.
Yeah,
he's not one of the celebrity.
Yeah, he's not your
Britney Spears astronaut.
Yeah, not one of those types. But it takes place. You know, it takes place in the 50s, and they do a great job of not like they just say the date, and then the art conveys also that it's in the 50s. It doesn't beat you over the head with like 50s references that like this is where it's taking place. The main theme of it is basically the son sort of figures out that his dad is not just like a reserve astronaut, and him having to deal with like thinking one thing about someone that you know, that you think you know really well and you think you love. And he was a little like shameful that his dad wasn't like a real astronaut, and coming to terms with the fact that his dad is, you know, something he, you know.
He was a bit ashamed that he felt the way
that,
he did about...
That he felt the way about his dad. And that's the main story. But that's a story about his three families, you know, follows, like, the son is sort of has a crush on the daughter of another family, and then there's, like, a young married couple that doesn't quite fit in with the rest of the astronauts because they're a little bit younger. And I thought it was... actually quite touching.
Yeah, there's a little coming-of-age story in there.
Yeah, and a little bit about, you know, the nature of, like, self-sacrifice. Like, there's a great scene with the dad, like, before he goes off up into space, you know, and at that time you have to remember, and at this time, I mean, space travel is dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even more back then where people, you know, entire programs were wiped out by one accident where everyone would die. So before he goes up, you know, he's talking to the younger guy, and he's like, you know, I'm going to lie to you and tell you that it's not harder to go up if you have a family. And, you know, he's like looking at a picture of his family and, you know, concerned about that. But that was the first one, and I really loved it. And the second volume's coming out in summer, so I look forward to some of that, black and white.
The question, not to sound stupid at all, but the idea that there was the secret space race.
I don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah, I was wondering if that is based on any actual fact. I mean, it
I
sounds like something that would have... would have happened, but
yeah, but I mean,
but they
I
were so embroiled in the race itself, you would think that
But there's I mean,
you never know.
It actually gets into a little bit with my second pick, which is First in Space, which deals with the U.S. launching a chimp into space, and like the factual story about the first ape that goes into space. And this book's written for a little younger crowd. It's more of an all ages type book. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit. There's a monkey dies at one point.
Oh.
So like if you have like a 5 year old, and it's a little disturbing. So maybe not. You know, it's not graphic.
The monkey dies violently.
Heroin overdose.
Oh,
the stress of the space program. And for the first 2/3 of the book, or the probably like the first half, I was like, hey, it's, you know, it's I like the art and I like the story, but I'm like, it's a little dry. I mean, it's just the story about a monkey going into space. But then they sort of introduce the idea of they give the ape a character a little bit. Like they have a scene where he has a dream, you know, about the way his life, you know, when he gets
before
he got captured. And you sort of, I mean, it's not overboard. It's not like they give, you know, him some
Disney
ape name
right.
that his parents called him when he has, like, a talking parrot that hangs out, you know. It's very nicely done just to give that give the ape enough character that you care Chimp's about dream? Him coming back. And the end is really fucking sad.
Oh.
Yeah, but very true. I mean, so that might make your kid cry. I mean, this was all factual, so I don't feel like I'm spoiling anything. But if you
right.
to go look, you know, it's all already out there. I mean, the ape ends up in the 70s just in this shitty zoo in Washington, D.C.
Hero ape left in a
shitty
zoo.
Well, like, the whole time you have him with this trainer, and the trainer gets very attached to the ape, and everyone's really cheering, you know, they
sure.
become very attached to him, and they almost do treat him like a hero because it meant that they had now passed, you know, the Soviet Union.
Right.
They're going to be able to pass the Soviet Union. And then you get this scene where they're in a zoo with all these kids, and the kids are like, oh, why would they send a monkey into space? Like, sort of how fast people forget how important
a bit
certain
of the trappings of fame,
yeah,
for
trapping,
even
yeah,
for a chimp.
Even for an ape. And that was a little sad. But it was a really fast read. I read it in one sitting. And for a kid, you know, I thought, you know,
a little history,
a little art.
I always liked astronauts.
Learn a little bit about the circle of life.
Yeah. And
the circle of life.
Yes. You learn
rocket
a little,
boosters
you,
and shit.
Yeah, all that, you know, rocket. You know, you have a kid who likes rockets. You learn a little bit about American history.
Are you going to read Laika, the book about the Russian dog?
No.
No?
Because he's an American. He's a true American.
Soviet Union never really went into space.
Oh, man. Saying.
As if we have some communist listener who's like, I cannot believe.
How do you resent what you said?
Sputnik.
That was my space week.
Very nice.
Yeah, and it was just.
Did you go and watch the right stuff afterwards?
No, it was weird because I just had the. I picked this one up and I read it and I was like, ah, might as well read this one about space too.
I read Astronaut Dad too. I did enjoy it also.
And it's just the first of two parts, correct? The
That's right.
Yep. There's a second volume coming out a little bit later this
in the
year.
Summer. I mentioned that.
Yep. I believe.
Does anyone talk? Does
Where
anyone
are we recording from again?
We need to work on our fucking listening skills.
Well, I got headphones on. I can't hear what you're saying.
I've got head cold.
All right, cool.
I quit smoking.
Everyone has an excuse except me. I guess I'm the asshole.
Get a vice and quit it, and then we'll pay attention.
Mr. Young, what have you been up to,
heroin.
Sir?
I read a couple books this week, but
nothing.
There's nothing to talk about. They're not. They weren't. I don't want to say what they are.
TV guy.
It'd just be me saying bad stuff about them. So,
but you tried.
I did try.
And you know
I read no novels really this week. I went through. My nightstand has about 5 trades sitting on it, and I've just been
nothing
angry
grabbed you.
This week.
No, it's kind of sad. You can't find one trade to read that you enjoy.
I've read a bunch of stuff lately that I have enjoyed. It's just you'd think there'd be some more out there, right?
I don't know.
You need to take a step away from the adaptations of the babysitter novel books.
Why? I mean,
because I feel you keep reading them, thinking like the next one's going to be the one where.
But it will. I have faith. I mean, Janice is a pretty good character.
There's going to be the secret passage. Hey,
babysitting, man, it's tough.
Kids get up to shenanigans.
There just hasn't. Like I said, I read a bunch of different stuff this week, but. I wouldn't call it top of anything.
Top of
all right. Move along.
All right, Mr. Salazar.
Yes.
Tell me, you like something?
Yes. I read the Escapists. I got the new hardcover edition of
the Brian K. Vaughan miniseries Escapists.
Yes, based on the Michael Chabon Pulitzer Prize winning novel, The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay. This
That's
is
dramatic
a
pause.
Yes, this is which I've never been able to finish the book. But
really,
yeah, I've tried like two or three times to get through it, and I just can't.
That's next on my list, I think, of books to read.
Did you ever finish I Am Legend?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Did finish I Am Legend, that's and sweet. I finished the first Joe Pitt book too.
Oh,
so
shit.
I've caught up a little bit.
Yeah. Way to go.
Anyway, The Escapist is Brian K. Vaughan, and there's a few artists: Jason Sean Alexander and Eduardo Beretta. Work on it with some covers by Brian Boland, Philip Bond, Cassidy, I think, did covers. And they have all the – because this was originally released
Frank
in single issues.
Frank Miller did a cover.
Frank Miller did a cover. James Jean, Alex Ross. Anyway, this is basically a story about a kid who finds out that his father, after his father passes away, finds out that his father was a huge fan of this 1940s pulp comic book hero, the Escapist. After his parents pass away, he decides that he wants to bring the Escapist back. So he takes his inheritance money and he buys the rights to the Escapist.
Sounds
and
like a disaster waiting to happen.
Oh, it's kind of like buying a racehorse.
And with a friend of his and a couple of friends of his, they start this comic and they start to try and do some interesting marketing things to try and get some notoriety for the return of the Escapist. And it's kind of intercut with what were, you know, hypothetically the actual pages from the new comic, which are drawn by Jason Alexander, which are phenomenal. Jason Alexander's art is awesome. I almost at some point wish that the whole thing was just an actual Escapist story drawn by him, because his stuff is so good. But it's cut back and forth, and it's very well written. It's sort of a love letter to Silver Age and Golden Age comics by Brian K. Vaughan, and at the same time, he sort of
an open letter of frustration.
Yeah, yeah,
industry.
Exactly. He kind of goes over some of the things that frustrate, you know, I think all of us fans, creators, and you know, a lot of people in the industry and outside of the industry, some of the things that really frustrate us about comics. But at the same time, he goes over a lot of things that we love about comics. And it was just a really well-written, well-produced story. A lot of the pages that are supposed to be the actual pages from the book don't have dialogue or have dialogue from the characters, the other characters in the book, the characters that
the
are writing.
The writer and the artist. Yeah, that was probably my favorite scene
when they're
in the book.
When they're talking or interacting, but the pages you're reading are from The Escapist. And it wasn't anything like mind-blowing or, you know, any sort of revolutionary. It was just a very solid, very well-done little story, and I just really enjoyed it.
You talk about Jason Alexander's art in this, and it was so stunning that you fell in love with the book that they were doing, and you were rooting for them so much, you know, for their vision of the Escapist to be successful in the scope of the story. Now you kind of get an idea fairly early on probably what's going to happen, but
yeah, I mean it's not like, yeah, the story isn't anything, you know, complex, and you pretty much know where it's going. It was very interesting in how it was done and how the story was told, and you know, you get to like the characters are certainly rooting for them to succeed, even though in the back of your mind you kind of know they're not going to. Mm-hmm. but overall it was just a good story. The only thing that has ever, and this has sort of bugged me about the entire Escapist thing, is that Michael Chabon just cannot lay off a little bit. Yeah, it's like everybody knows the Escapist is not a real superhero from the 1940s. It never existed, and it was only existed in your book. But it's like he just cannot ever just back off a little bit with that. You know, it's like he constantly has to pound that in your, even the introduction.
It isn't an introduction.
It's a story about Sam Clay, the fictional character from Cavalier and Clay, meeting Brian K. Vaughan at a convention when Brian K. Vaughan is a small child. So it's like everything he does and that's always sort of bothered me a little bit for some reason. Yeah.
It's like a comedian or an actor that never breaks character.
Well, on one hand, it's very cool. I like the idea that he's brought the characters from his novel into comics and has kept that thing alive. But yeah, at some point it's just like, okay, I get it. I get, you know, yeah. You know what I mean?
I already bought it.
But this was really good. It was just a very solid story.
Yeah, it's reading the hardcover, $20.
$20, Dark Horse Comics. It's sort of a small format. It's a little smaller than the
size of a novel.
Yeah, exactly.
Size of a novel.
Yeah. I think I trade. You can pick it up at plug our
novel
sponsor.
About a character who's not trades. Real.
yeah, it's a fictional.
I think I checked it. You can get it in stock for like $12.
There you go.
And that's
it was good.
Also, for anyone else out there that would be interested about the Escapists, the little prestige books that they came out with, I thought were phenomenal, and a lot of great.
Will Eisner's final story is in.
Yeah, almost one little of anthologies all about the Escapists.
Yeah, it's a bunch. It's a they're collections of.
So I don't want to buy it.
Of different artists and writers writing. Are doing escapist stories.
I buy all my stuff based on whether it's popular.
Of course you do. All right, that's it from me. Chris, pick one.
Oh, man.
Jesus.
You had
Christ.
All this time. This is theatric. This is so theatrical.
You know, every Friday you know we do this, right? You've only been doing this for like 2 years now.
But there are like
top
four
of the stack,
really good things
every,
that I read
pick,
this week.
What was the best one?
Pick one.
Okay, your turn's over. Tom?
The okay. Goon. The All Goon right. number 20.
There you go.
I like that. You put pressure on him.
I got to.
This is the slimline format of Chris doing Top of the Stack where you have to press him into 16 pages.
So no ads. No ads here.
Production.
Yeah, this is Eric Powell's return to the regular ongoing series of The Goon. Mm-hmm. We talked about Chinatown a few weeks ago and how much I really enjoyed that graphic novel that he had done.
Yep.
And he actually talks about that a little bit in the letters column. About
which I found interesting because he never really did the letter columns. It was always Dwight T. Albatross.
Yeah.
And now in this one, he's doing the letter columns. I wonder if he's going to continue to do that.
I hope so, because I thought they were entertaining of their own. But he talks about how he was a little worried about existing fans of The Goon picking up Chinatown and not accepting it as being more of a serious tone book, because Chinatown was more of a serious noir tale. Well, this is not. This goes right back into classic Goon jokes and punchlines that I probably haven't laughed out loud while reading a comic in a while, and this one...
Creepy.
Yeah.
Does your wife like walk into your room and say, why are you laughing so hard?
Oh, no, I was on...
It's The Goon!
There was some really funny... Actually, some of the best dialogue I think he's written for The Goon. There was some really funny stuff in there.
We were talking about this this old friend of Marta's who would keep meeting these crazy women, and... It would just, he would go out and these women that he would date were just crazy. And I told her one of the Goon's line whenever Frankie is telling one of his one night stands to beat it. And the Goon says, I told you not to be bedding no crazy dames. Crazy follows you home. And
yes, it does follow you.
I thought that was just a great line. And it's just, one great Goon line after the other, kind of continues the friendship between Goon and Frankie.
And also a new colorist.
Dave Stewart.
Dave Stewart colored this.
Dave Stewart's going to color everything someday.
He should.
He could.
Pretty much.
And,
he could.
I wish
he has eight arms.
I wish he would color my life.
Oh, that's kind of...
Is that sad?
In a way,
is that melancholy?
In a way, he already does.
Yeah.
Oh, that brings it back up.
Oh, and there are some speaking of the letters column,
some hot broads in there.
There's some hot broads with Goon tattoos.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. So, pretty cool stuff.
And, I like that.
But
tell you what,
we record at Dark Tower.
One of the things that I did kind of feel while I was reading this is that if you've never read The Goon, you could pick this up and jump right into it.
I feel like you could do that with any issue of The Goon, though.
Yeah.
It's such a loose
Goon and Frankie are friends, and they get in, and Goon is a gangster, and they get into
crazy situation.
Things going on, and there's always kind of a tinge of the supernatural, and it's usually very laugh out loud funny.
I feel that there was a bit more
meat.
Can I see those hot?
Yeah, a little bit more meat. Like we had talked about when you talked about the Goon hardcover, is that It seemed like he was trying to set up a little bit so that he can move forward a little bit with the goon and try and evolve it a little bit. And I thought that this issue seemed like a bit more than the previous goon
scene. I think he's turned into a much better writer. He's always been able to tell a fun story. But yeah, I think everything that he went
honing
through,
his
doing,
craft.
Yeah, doing a project like Chinatown, I think probably made him muscles he hasn't before.
It was good. I did like it. There was two or three moments in it where I laughed at it. And I actually kind of laughed.
Crazy
at it.
Follows you home.
So. That wasn't one of them, but there was a couple of them.
These girls with tattoos. This one doesn't have a tattoo. But I was going to say, give more credit to the girls that only have a goon tattoo as opposed to the one who has 1,000 tattoos in one house.
And a little goon.
Yeah, I mean, because at some point, you'll get around to the goon.
If you're big enough.
If you're big enough, you're going to run out of shit. You know?
Somebody has my signature tattooed on them.
Really?
Really?
They showed up
and her name is Casey.
They showed up at a convention with...
a guy or a girl?
A guy. 1 year. It's a little crazy. He showed up at the convention with a sketch I did for him the previous year tattooed on his leg. Then he said, would you mind doing signature for me? I did that and tattooed it.
Jesus Christ, dude.
There are probably 35 photos that I've gotten in emails of tattoos that I've
Understand, you know, art that you've done, taking that and turning it in. But your signature is a little
it's wild.
Wow, that's a little out there, man. That's like
Do you have any tattoos?
Yeah. They're shit ones.
Got barbed wire all over his body.
Tribals and barbed wire.
I mean, you know, I'm from the north, but the rebel flag's so cool.
I'm a rebel.
I mean, I got a toothpick now, buddy. I can do that.
We're going to go and buy some very expensive chewing sticks later, though.
Yeah, chewing sticks.
Gourmet toothpicks.
All right, round two. Ding.
Jeez.
I'm going to do a fast one.
Quick.
Oh, sorry. The 12. I never go long. The 12 by J. Michael Straczynski and Chris Weston, which surprised me. It's from Marvel. It deals with some Golden Age Marvel characters who are frozen by Nazis and wake up in modern day America, and how that
That's
goes.
Just crazy.
I know, isn't it? But it's great, and I love because I love sort of World War II characters. You so this not. Is sort of in my.
You stop it.
Scotty, you're crazy, man. You're going to follow
me
home.
I'm sorry.
No, you're going to follow.
I follow you home, crazy.
I got your face tattooed on my chest.
On my tit.
All right.
Back to the 12.
Two pages in, whenever there's a guy that's wearing a shark helmet, you know that Tom's going to wipe his
brush. I was like, yeah, of course you'd wear a shark helmet. I like the fact that JMS did a pretty good job of it would be really easy to make this sort of like a JSA type book, but he sort of skirts the line and definitely gives it more of a Marvel feel to the characters. I was a little concerned when they had the one character who's like homophobic. I'm like, every single time you have a goddamn book about anyone from the 40s, you have to have one guy who's like latently.
Well, it was like one out of 12 people in the 40s would be
homophobic. Yeah, I mean, I know statistically it's true, but it's like, seriously.
Wait, which guy is homophobic?
Dynamic man who's homophobic / possibly a closeted
homophobic. Well, yeah, he's closet gay.
Yeah, I mean, when I first read that, I was like, oh, God. You know, I feel like every time
that's
I read.
The 40s.
Yeah, every time I read a book, it's like, hey, it's the 40s. We didn't talk about this back then. Let's include this into the story. But they did he surprised me a little bit by setting up the story and giving it an end that actually intrigued me to keep reading.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think many of these characters are actually going to be sticking around.
Which I think is kind of a shame. There's a couple things I wanted to say. I read it too and I liked it. But there was two moments in the book that I was disappointed at. The story changed, yet I still liked it in the end, which was really strange. But I am kind of thinking, they're not going to stick around. But that's kind of a shame because it is sort of – it would be an opportunity for Marvel to sort of have
their own
JSA.
Yeah, but the thing is you're never going to have – you're not
– they're not iconic enough to be respected like the JSA is.
Well, no, it's not that. It's like – it's obviously set up for a 12-issue story. This is this is very much the first chapter of a trade.
Sure.
Very enjoyable, but still very much just the first part of a story. And these characters are so – like, who knew that these characters existed?
They really?
Yeah, they're all.
Are they all?
Yeah. Were they timely or actual?
Yeah, they were all actual.
Okay, characters. They all were actual. I wasn't sure.
But it's like, Yeah, I don't want them to pull a 1940s century on me and then start jamming these characters in my face.
Well, no.
That, like, this character is important.
Right.
You should care about them now. We skipped all the stuff where he's actually developed.
Well, that's why I was disappointed that it didn't just stay in the 40s. Because I was like, at first, I'm like, oh, this is
It's really hard to manufacture. It's hard to manufacture, like,
Roy Thomas could have done
50 years of a character. Roy
Thomas could
around.
Do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Roy Thomas could take
I heard
those
that
characters.
When it's all done, JMS is not asking to have his name removed, but asking the editors to jumble up all the letters in his name and just randomly put them on there.
This book's by M. Jekyll Straczynski.
Yeah.
M. Jekyll Straczynski. Yeah.
Like so it's like a fun game.
Like Boggle.
J. Strack Michael Zinski. Yeah.
I like, speaking of the cover and the
boobies?
Jumbled up letters, sorry. but thought it was interesting how it's described. A thrilling novel of tomorrow. They're already calling it a novel, so you know this is
one
this
more day. Novel of tomorrow.
Novel of tomorrow.
I'm
looking for continuity problems starting now. I swear to God, if they dick around with the laughing mask,
do you think that robot's going to come back at some point and cause problems?
Yeah, they don't foreshadow that at all.
Maybe? No, it's true. Again, it's like the
I don't
like,
think that anything
if you have
could go wrong.
A 1940s group. And you're just introducing them. You have to have three things. You have to have a homophobic man who might be homosexual, a robot of some type who's menacing, and like a hot female who's more dangerous than she looks.
With a goofy name.
Yeah, with a goofy name.
Clairvoyant.
And a bunch of you know.
I did like it though. I did.
Yeah, it was good.
Speaking of the hot gal, did you see the very disturbing and creepy picture of the Nazi cop in a field?
Yes,
I passed right over it. Didn't see it
as they go into the cryo chamber. No,
you don't see that type of shit.
I don't notice that kind of disgusting.
I almost put it down.
Nazis. I pretty much ignore anything a Nazi does.
Yeah.
As I just. I picked up the.
It's not
the,
pro-Nazi.
I picked up the Agents of Atlas deluxe hardcover over the holidays.
That's good golden age
stuff,
too.
It also has a menacing robot and a female more dangerous. Is there any homophobia in that? I think Parker avoids that.
It's so homophobic, there's not even the homophobia.
No one mentions
gay.
But I'm really glad I put off reading Agents of Atlas until the deluxe hardcover came out. But I liked the first issue of the 12, and I know I'm going to regret buying this in single issues because you know that they're going to come out with an awesome deluxe hardcover of this.
Well, just keep buying it so I can read it.
Okay.
That's all.
I'll do that. Yeah. I'll take one for the team.
Good.
Who's next?
Scotty.
No.
You didn't read anything since the last time we got to you.
Yes, no.
I just got...
I finished Preacher. Didn't get better.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
I picked up, and I had already read this, but I picked up the trade.
You son of a bitch.
I know.
You're throwing off all the numbers.
Shadow Pact, Volume 1 by Billingham. I just call him Billingham. Billingham? I think you should change his name.
That's presumptuous, my friend.
Billingham. Bill Willingham, and a handful
Wild
of...
Wild Bill Willingham is what I call him.
Wild Bill. We were talking about this last week, Tom, that Shadow Pact's sort of an underrated book, I think, or underappreciated a little bit.
Because it's not tied into whatever people are complaining about. So.
There's no one complaining about
so
this
no,
book.
There's no one complaining
about
it.
We need to start complaining about it, and then it'll get...
No, people... you got to get popular, and then people
will about it. For those that may not know, Shadow Pact came out of the whole...
Day of Vengeance
thing, which was really good too. And they're sort of like all the different mystical characters in the DC that got together and they fight other magical creatures and investigate
it's pretty funny
magic.
That too.
It is. It's funny. The art's good. It's. I don't have a ton to say about it. I mean, other than there's a talking chimp and
Detective
like,
Chimp is in it.
Detective Chimp
with
and,
a talking.
Oh, you like you're,
and Blue,
you're
Devil.
A Blue Devil fan.
I like Blue Devil. So
Detective Chimp is a talking chimp that wears a Sherlock Holmes hat.
Yes.
And is unashamed of it.
Yeah, no, unabashed.
Which I applaud
him for.
it's like homophobia.
But if you it's just a solid book. I mean, it's just a solid fun read. There's nothing too serious in it.
Those...
It's just one of those kind of good it's not necessarily superhero. I mean, it kind of is, but it's
magical.
More magic
and it's just
and
a
jokes
fun
about
comic
magic.
Book?
It's just a simply fun.
That would be a book I would recommend to those people who like to read who like like big two superhero comic books but don't want to read something that they have to read a thousand other things to get. Like, this book doesn't cross over with
right.
anything. You're not, and
it's to, its own thing.
To the detriment of its sales, perhaps. Yeah. It's not been tied in with anything else. But it's very much its own creature. You can read it.
Right.
You don't need to know anything about the characters because like, yeah, the characters haven't had a ton of
History.
Mm-hmm. Don't have.
And they go through some of it and sort of, you know, I mean, they kind of redefine a lot of the characters. Yeah. And it's just good, solid stuff.
Ragman's,
so go
Ragman,
check it out.
Ragman,
go buy it.
A cool character.
It's like $12 or something. All right, it's $15. But
yeah, well, what? Yeah. So what? If you can buy a $12 book,
you can buy a $15.
Are you too cheap to fork over $3 extra?
Yeah.
So go get Billingham Shadow Pack.
All right, another, I think we throw in a couple other books of note.
Books of note. That's the new section of the show.
Books of note. Top
next
of the stack.
Books of note.
What do you got?
I want to talk about the end.
I
want
to
talk about the end.
Oh, was it as good as Watchmen meets Lord of the Rings?
No,
it had Jaws in it.
Yeah. Sorry, Rick. I
enjoyed it. You know, it's, and that's kind of, you know, the trap that it's like, oh, this is going to be the greatest book ever. And I consciously didn't go into it going, this is going to be the greatest book ever. And
well, thank God.
You said that out loud.
Because he's done that. Because Remender's done that to you before. He's told you, this is going to be the greatest book ever.
Chris,
and you went into it.
Well, he did that with Fury.
And you went into it thinking
it
was going
to
be.
Chris looks the sound and goes, this is going to be the best book ever. And then opens to the first page and begins reading.
Ooh, it's starting off well. And speaking of starting off, that's what I actually didn't like about the end league. I thought that the first quarter of the book was a little heavy-handed in its setup. It felt like the opening of a really long opening to like a Terminator movie. It's like in a world.
It has the trap of what people, whenever people want to do a story with a character like Superman, so they think, well, it's going to be a shortcut. Because I'm going to use someone who's like Superman.
So you
then they spend as much time as it would take
defining
to make
a new
character to say how this person's different from Superman. Mm-hmm. So like the, you know, it's like, here's someone who's like the Flash, but it's not like the Flash. And here's why. You know, and it's like, well, then skip the part where you're making – it doesn't have to be like Superman to work. So don't – I thought it was a great idea. Yeah.
Well, this is obviously a setup issue, and I think that he was very conscious of doing all of the setup in the first issue so he could get it out of the way, and now he can tell his story. And it is jam-packed. There's a lot of stuff going on, but the basic idea is that it's post-apocalyptic. The majority of the people on the planet Earth have superpowers now, and the good people, the good heroes, are in hiding because they kind of got their asses kicked.
It's Mad Max meets Top 10 means Watchmen.
Uh-huh. And a little quest for fire.
With a
dash of...
In Tarzan.
Yeah.
And they have to go on a quest to find Thor's hammer. The second half of the book, once you kind of got into the setup, I really enjoyed. And I'm looking forward to the second issue. So...
You know what that book could use? Some creative back matter. Something to tell backstory without literally having to be the characters...
Yeah,
like Watchmen, where you're reading the.
Because I felt like I read a ton.
Then it really would be like Watchmen.
I felt like I read a ton and knew not a lot about actually what the characters were like, besides that two of them
knew
were
more
lesbians.
About the world.
Yeah, and it's just sort of like
the history of it.
It's too much, really. I mean, you know, compared something like this compared to Pax Romana, which came out, and I think Jonathan Hickman did a really awesome part where. There's a scene where it's just four characters talking, and he didn't dick around with having to make an issue of four characters sitting around because he designed it in such a way he just had transcripts of the conversation, which was fine because I didn't need to see a face saying that.
Right.
You know, like,
you don't need to see a bunch of word balloons.
Because I got a ton of information and it filled in all the stuff, but I didn't feel like it was all jammed up. I wasn't getting jammed.
You were getting jammed all day.
I wasn't getting jammed all day. Yeah. But I mean, I think it has potential. I didn't really like the first issue all that much. It's like, that's what I'm trying to say. Sorry, Chris.
No,
that's shit on your face.
You can only like things that I like.
Yeah.
No, I definitely.
Damn you.
I definitely
saw points.
Well, I saw the faults in it, but I'm intrigued enough to pick up the second issue, and I think that it I think it has a neat story to tell, so we'll see.
Is it a finite series? Or
yeah, it's 12 issues.
12 issues.
It's bi-monthly.
Maxi. Oh, really? Bi-monthly. Yeah. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, yeah.
Right. We got 2 years of it ahead.
Wow. I got to wait a long time for the trade.
Fuck yeah.
I'll update you bi-monthly.
Okay, let me know.
All right.
Tom, you got anything else?
Nah, I picked the stuff.
I'm not going to talk about it. Well, I'm just going to mention something. I got the brand new day, Amazing Spider-Man. I liked it. Congratulations, Joe Quesada, for getting rid of that stupid marriage.
The brand new day or the one more day?
Brand new day.
Is that out already?
The first one came out this week.
Came out this week.
Is that Bocello?
Who the hell did? No, it wasn't Bocello.
This is the Dan Slott and
McNiven.
Who does a damn fine J. Jonah Jameson?
I actually have one thing I want to mention quick too, and this will be more about my answer, man. Mm-hmm. For everyone who's sending me emails about Teen Titans Year One and how you're supposed to be mad that they're using IMs, please list. You know, actually, you would have already heard this.
I'll save it for the week after.
I'm still going to be angry. So I'm still going to yell at you, whoever's sending me those emails.
Amazing Spider-Man, I just liked it, and I thought it was good, and I don't really give a shit that they fucked around and got rid of the marriage and all that stupid. I don't really care. It was a good. I read it for what it was. It was a good Spider-Man story.
How many copies am I supposed to burn?
11. I think is the over-under is 10.
If I like it, how many do I send back to Joe Quesada?
Jesus Christ. I couldn't believe. When somebody posted that on the forum, I'm like, really? People are doing that?
People are burning,
buying it and then burning it.
No offense to anyone who did it, but you're probably going to take offense. You will take offense to this, but that's something a child does to a toy when they're having a hissy fit. Sorry. When you rip something, I don't like this. I'm going to rip it up.
I couldn't believe that people were. I think
the funniest thing is the companies, Marvel's sitting there laughing our asses
you
off.
Bought
going,
it and ripped it.
You paid for it,
yeah,
dipshit.
Thanks. I don't
know. Everyone who's booked.
If you really want to make a statement, don't fucking buy it.
Wow. So I don't know. I mean, I don't want to get into it because it's just a big stupid mess of drama that doesn't matter.
But
I just wanted to say I liked it, and I'm glad that they did it because...
Everybody will be glad.
Yeah.
They can bitch right now. Everybody will be glad.
Yeah.
Well, so. I mean, you've been talking about this week about Marvel's kind of...
Rebooting.
They're rebooting a lot of stuff.
Well, you got a new Hulk, coming.
How did you like the new Hulk?
I liked it. It was all right. I mean, it wasn't... I don't think that's going to be the Hulk forever.
What?
You know, but I thought
the
it was
Red
okay.
Hulk's not going to be
well,
in the movie.
But I'm biased because anything with Doc Samson, I'm pretty much going to like.
You
like
are
Doc.
Totally
I'm a big Doc
I
Samson.
Really,
I am
really
I'm
like Ed McGuinness's She-Hulk. He draws She-Hulk great.
Yeah, I like the art. I thought it was pretty good. They're kind of rebooting everything. You got a new Hulk, new Cap. Oh, spoilers. I got bitched at on the forum because I didn't, because I guess these are spoilers.
I didn't know too.
Wolverine's kind of revamped
a
little bit.
He's a woman now.
He's a woman.
He has cock claws.
Yeah.
Fantastic Four is probably going to get a whole new thing. I mean, they're getting a whole new look.
Edgy.
It's probably going to be a little edgy.
You think?
That might be. You got Ghost Rider's got a bit of a change. Mm-hmm.
He's neither a ghost
else?
Nor a writer.
Cap's still dead.
Well, the whole X-Men
franchise.
But
they're kind of doing it.
Everybody else are Skrulls.
And you're kind of they're kind of doing it. I don't want to say sneaky, but it's like they're not doing a big event that changes everything.
They're just having five different events that are...
Actually, they did. You just didn't notice.
Yeah. I suppose.
It got lost.
X-Men is a big event.
Messiah.
Well, yeah, but they haven't changed anything yet.
It's not one person.
I suppose. But, I mean, it's not like a big like crisis event where all of a sudden everything is getting rebooted,
even though
all these characters start, you know, especially like Cap, Hulk... Spider-Man, they're like brand new characters.
Imagine
you know.
How angry people would get if those were all in the same comic.
Oh my
Imagine
god!
Yeah. You couldn't tear it enough.
You couldn't burn
how
enough.
Many how many times can you tear a page?
So
the
anyway,
Diamond Shredder wouldn't do it. Yeah. Huh?
That's it. That's all right. All I got.
Here we go.
Couple quick notes.
Books of note. Can we have a music?
I need.
For
yeah, I think I have
note.
To create a
books.
No
of
books. Of
no, it'll
note.
Be like this.
Wah, wah, wah.
Books of note. The Comics Journal, number 287, came out.
We did that right before Comics Journal.
Jeffrey Brown is the feature interview in this, and Jeffrey's been on the show a few times, and I thought it was so nice that I came, picked up my copy of the Comics Journal, and it already had a Jeffrey Brown sketch in it.
Oh, well.
Very cool. And there's also a 22-page Greg Rucka.
You won't get that anywhere else but Dark Tower.
What? Yes.
A sketch. I'm just letting people know, don't expect if you go and buy the Comics
Journal. Jeffrey Brown didn't go to Diamond. Yeah, he didn't go to all of them.
He didn't sign them all.
Don't put that box on that truck yet. I haven't finished.
Yeah. I just wanted to let people know because the way you said it was like,
you're going to get one.
Yeah.
You are.
Yeah.
Actually, if you shop at Dark Tower Comics Collectibles, because yes, Jeffrey shops here.
Okay, Books of Note is over. Books of Note.
And Darwin Cook finished up the Spirit. Thank you.
Darwin Cook did finish up the Spirit. Issue. It was a great issue. And
a
great 12 issues.
See?
Fantastic. Well, yeah, but again, we don't...
We only got so much time, man.
Yeah. We're done. Goodbye.
Under the porno section.
All right, that'll take care of our comic talk. Now it's to our,
free-form
pop culture.
Pop.
What you got, Thomas?
I've been watching the first season of Dexter from Showtime.
Serial killer.
How far are you into it?
I just finished the first disc, so I'm 4 episodes.
Oh, God.
In. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, so I just want to talk about very general.
Sure.
But if you don't know what Dexter is, it's based on a series of novels. I'm not sure who the author was of it, but it's about a forensics expert expert who's actually a serial killer. And his whole thing is that his dad sort of identifies him as being a serial killer when he's a kid and sort of pushes him to, like, the one – you can't stop him from being a serial killer.
Right, he knows he can't stop him.
So the one thing he can do is he can direct his serial killing towards bad people.
Right.
And that, so what he does is he kills people that he thinks have gotten away from the legal system, sort of like a vigilante. He's very much a vigilante justice, but he's very fucked up himself. Like,
he gives him a code.
Yeah, I mean, and it's cool because the main actor, who I believe is Michael Hall, he was the gay brother in 6 Feet Under.
Mm-hmm. That is the same guy. Okay.
Yeah, he's amazing in that because the whole – it requires an actor who can – his whole facade of everything he does when he interacts with other people is to be the most normal, nice guy.
Right.
But the whole time you're also getting that he doesn't give a shit about anybody else and that it's just...
There's a lot of inner monologue in it from him.
Because he doesn't feel... he doesn't feel emotion.
He's disconnected.
Yeah.
He doesn't... his whole life, he hasn't ever really truly felt anything. So his adoptive father has also taught him, I understand, son. I understand there's a disconnect from life in general, but
the only feeling,
you have to
the only,
fake it.
The only feelings he has is when he's killing someone.
Right. And so his father teaches him at a young age to fake his way through it so everybody else will feel comfortable with him.
Right.
You know, it's basically all the things to skirt by and never thought.
And because his father was a cop, he taught him how to get away with it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which was really kind of an interesting
thing. It's a mind-boggling show that has you rooting for somebody who fucking murders people.
Yeah, you're like,
the thing is, he does it, but he doesn't do it because he thinks it's not because he has some sense of, like, this is the right thing to do. It's just like his dad told him he should do it,
right?
And that's why he does
it. He's got to kill.
He's going to kill somebody anyway.
Yeah, so he justifies it a little bit by, you know, killing bad people. All Jeff Lindsay is the author of the books, of the series of books. I was gonna
think about reading it, but my neighbor told me that they nailed the book on the first season so good that it's almost redundant. Like, it's either read it or watch it. Either one of them, you've got it pretty much down.
To testify to how compelling it is, I'm like maybe one of the most passive TV watchers. Like, something has to really interest me for me to follow it and like be like, oh, I really want to watch. I can't even tell you how many shows I've watched like the first disc of a season and been like, whatever,
that's enough.
And it's not even because we talked about this during the break, the cast besides Michael Hall isn't that great.
Yeah. I mean,
do you think it's because of your disconnect from humanity?
Yeah,
that
I'm also hollow on the inside.
He's a serial killer of ants,
and it's a messed up show. I mean,
it's graphic.
Yes, it's like, extremely graphic. And
well, if you're on the first disc, man, it gets crazy. Oh,
I watched the first season of it, and then I canceled Showtime.
Yeah, I just finished the first season about anymore. 2 weeks ago on DVD. But you were right. Like, the main character, Dexter, is great actor.
And it's good to see him interact with other people because
And it's riddled with shit actors.
He still manages, even though it's like inner monologue, you also get the sense that Because you know it, you can see he's playing it a little fake.
Yeah.
Like he's fake hat, like, hey, you know. Yeah. But he does it so well that you can see why people fall for it.
Right.
You know, how he gets by. Right. You know, like he has a girlfriend. He doesn't want to have sex. He feels no sexual desire. So he dates a woman who's like a multiple rape victim from his husband who doesn't want to have sex.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden she's like thinking that that's where he wants to go. And so he has to figure out a way to avoid.
I thought that part of the show was smart. And she's a good actress. I'm sorry.
Julie Benz is good.
Which is married to the Crypt Keeper voice.
Oh, really?
But you guys didn't know that.
Did not know that. Did not know that.
If Dexter isn't in the scene with the other cops, it is the most cliche.
Oh,
well, black guy is, he's been a lot of stuff, but the black guy who plays the detective
is way over the top.
He's horrible.
Yeah, which
you're a freak. Yeah. You freak me out.
Get away from me, fucking psycho. You just get the work, fucking psycho. Yeah.
And the crazy thing is you could tell from the writing, I think that you can understand what they're going for, which is they're going for a seasoned detective that is good with hunches.
Yeah.
And he senses something about Dexter.
He's supposed to be the tension because you're always sort of worried, is he going to figure out...
It's because of television. The way television works is it gets written and then there's always different to write. So there's no way to actually get in and convey because it's at such
a fast
pace.
It's not
going to
be consistent. It's not going
to
be...
Yeah, there's such a fast pace of filming. There's no way for a writer to be able to get in there and control an actor's interpretation
of the words.
So you could tell what the script is supposed to be because obviously he's the only person on the show that has a hunch Dexter is a fucked up character. Yeah.
And it's
a
very smartly written show.
Yes. Yeah. But this guy is such a poor actor.
Yeah. He goes so over the top.
Instead of being like kind of sly and looking like, he's a little bit of a weirdo. It is really that like, you motherfucker, I will put you in the motherfucking head, you're a freak!
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, Jesus. Not only are you playing the stereotypical, it's not even stereotypical anymore. Yeah. It's like 1985 Lethal Weapon black guy stereotypical. You know, like...
Well, going back to what you were saying about how, you know, you can... I think that's part of the, like, his charm of liking that character, too, is the way he plays it off is that you're almost in... You're inside the joke.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like he's messing with everybody and he's you know, pulling this prank on everyone and you're looking at all them going, you don't get it. We get it.
Right.
Yeah. You don't realize he's psychotic and we do, but because he's so good at it, because like you said, he's not fake, but he does just enough where, you know, it really conveys that he's faking it.
It also has one of the greatest opening sequences to a TV where he's like cutting up stuff and like,
Stuff.
Yeah,
like
but
cutting
it looks
a burger.
Really brutal. Yeah. And just like,
he's just cutting a piece of pie or something.
Yeah, I love that beginning sequence. I think that's so perfect for that show. But I heard some good things and I picked it up and I was like,
just gets better too. It was one of the shows where I popped it in. And then I think in 2 days I finished it all. Like I just could not stop watching it.
I force myself to pace myself a little bit. Like at the most, like on a weekend, I'll watch two in one day. Yeah. But like at night, I'll be like, watch one.
Oh, shit, I think I did six one night. I just was like, I gotta keep watching Dexter.
Yeah.
That was me with The Wire, and we're not doing that with Weeds.
Weeds is a 30-minute. Show anyway.
See, The Wire, I could never do that because I always felt like I had to pay so much attention to The Wire that for me, like, more than two in a row, and I was just like, I need, like,
need to take a break. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I always...
I watched, four seasons.
I was kind of like that with The Wire, too, because
somebody else
there's
told me about,
so much going on in it.
I think Casey was saying something like, she was trying to explain to someone about The Wire, like, oh, it's a show you really have to pay a lot of attention to, and I don't know why, but I never got... I mean, I never got that feeling because
that
I was just...
It's not that you have to pay attention. It's that, it, like, you want to. Because all the things... Because the way
how
they
everything
do it with the,
interacts with everything else.
The way people talk, like... They don't... Dialogue in that show, at times, is indecipherable.
And really?
Supposed to... Well, like, the second season with the dock workers, there's a huge sequence when they're all talking in, like, Baltimore slang about stuff. You understand what's going on.
Right.
Not that you're confused.
Right.
You understand what's going on, but if you were to literally, like, if someone who wasn't, if you were to write it down for me and I was going to read it to you without any inflection or anything, just, you wouldn't understand. I mean, wouldn't make any sense. Well, that, I mean, and that's kind of why that show is really cool like that, because
I guess if you didn't grow up in the streets like me.
Yeah, well
you didn't grow up in the crack.
But in my ivory tower, no one spoke like that.
Well, no, the passage of time in that series is pretty important, because they go, you know, it's almost in real time as you're watching it. They go from, you know, spring to summer to fall.
Do you know that show has never won an Emmy?
That's
No, it has never won an Emmy.
I think
that is a fucking crime.
Every show on HBO usually sweeps.
Nope.
But
not
that one.
One.
You know why?
Four seasons.
Like, that show always debuted. Like, that show was always on while some other big HBO event show was going
on.
Like,
Sopranos
ending,
right, right.
Sex and the City ending. Everything always ending
has not
right
won.
During a season of The Wire. So they have to go in, like, oh, it's your last season. We've got to give all the awards.
This will be their year then.
The Wire is one of the smartest, most well acted.
Oh yeah.
Well, most great production. I mean, everything.
I don't know
about
that I've seen
show,
a show with
it's not
that
too
big
much,
of a cast.
It's not too little.
That everyone's believable.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the plots are not so like, look, oh we're so crazy. I mean,
no,
it's just,
no.
They're
like
as simple
the
as they need to be. And they're complicated as they need to be. There's nothing about it that you don't get confused. You don't get lost. You're not like, what? There's never a moment during any of that show that I went, and there's always a moment in the show where you go, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Right? You
yeah,
know what I mean? There's always that, okay. Like that moment, and this show, The Wire, I've never had that moment.
But it's pretty at the same so time, far. Unbelievably compelling.
Oh, yeah.
The characters,
great child actors.
Yeah, and that fourth season? Is that
fourth season?
I mean,
fourth season.
Even the first season.
Well, yeah. Just all the corner kids.
There are some emotional scenes. I mean, when the kid in the first season...
I'm trying to remember back.
Wallace.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God.
It's also funny, though, at times, too. I mean...
Oh, it's hilarious.
Oh, Bump and McNulty. Those guys are just
when the,
fantastic together.
Was it the first season when they got to the crime scene? And the whole...
The whole scene.
So it's just, like 2 minutes before the opening.
And the cool thing is it's not... It doesn't have the CSI syndrome where it's like, we figured out this crime because this bullet was made in a country that hasn't existed in 20 years. Yeah.
Can you enhance that?
No, I
can't.
It's just cop work. But I think...
it's good police.
Good police, yeah.
Old police, yeah.
One of my favorite things about that show is the incredible artist that they get to do the opening... Which is different each season.
Oh, the
same song.
Yeah.
Done by, I think,
Blind Boys of Alabama.
The Neville Brothers.
Look out, maybe for
which was awesome.
Look out for
Tom Waits. It's original.
Who was the second season? The old bluesy guy.
I'm working on something.
Well, I want to do the guy.
That's who wrote it. That's Tom Waits.
Was he the second season? Okay.
He of Sword.
He wrote that song.
Swordfish Trombones and Nighthawks at the Diner.
The second season was
The Blind Boys of Alabama.
And then there was the Neville Brothers was season three, I think. And I haven't watched season four yet, so I don't know who did season four.
It was kind of a more of a hip hop version.
Yeah, it's kind of
and
a
this year is Steve Earle, who is plays a recurring character. He's kind of
I haven't seen any.
I'm not even on season four yet, so I don't want to know any characters.
Is before that.
Don't tell me.
This was before season four, wasn't it?
What?
Steve Earle. He was in one of the first two seasons.
He's
at the
rehab center. He's the guy who comes out of jail, is gonna go back into the life, but then decides not to and opens the boxing gym.
Oh yeah, yeah.
His sponsor. Right?
No,
white guy?
No, Bub's sponsor.
Oh, you're right. You're right. I'm sorry. Bub's.
Oh, yeah,
the big white guy with the beard.
Yeah. Like, I'm just take it one day at a time, man.
Steve Earle, who is one of the, and this is not hyperbole, probably one of the greatest American singer-songwriters.
Yeah.
Yes.
That no one knows.
None of us have heard.
I've got to get you some Steve Earle because he is amazing.
I do love that song though, but.
Any other TV shows of interest?
TV shows? American Gladiator? No.
I did just watch I bought a six-disc documentary on the history of rock and roll.
Oh, is it? I've heard
the
good
time
things
life
about
one.
That one. I've heard good things about
it's really
that.
Really cool. Yeah. I mean, because they go back, you know, like... start with like the Delta Blues and just and build. Mm. And
I've heard
is,
very good reviews of that as it being not shitty as most documentary, like, this is about the history of rock and roll.
Yeah, right. It's not like a VH1 MTV thing where they'll be like, and then, no, all of a sudden they did a video.
Yeah, all of a sudden it cuts to John Mayer.
Yeah. No. I mean, this pretty much is following, I mean, they're about hour-long episodes, four per disc or whatever, so... I mean, it still has to give you some bullet points. I mean, it never spends two. It spends equal time on each point. I think like the 50s probably get the biggest
chunk. Sure.
The biggest chunk in the first couple episodes because I mean, there's the so many people to talk about. Yeah. I mean, the Chuck Berrys and the you know Elvis. So yeah, but even before Elvis, I mean, Elvis
the
is
ink
still.
Spots.
Oh.
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey, little Haley in the comments.
But then you just get to find out such good things from it. Like Pete Townsend was one of the people that there was a good number of musicians that were interviewed through each era. Like like Tom Petty would be on there, and he got a chance to talk about each era that they would talk about. So he'd talk about the 50s and the 60s and the 70s.
Right.
So
they keep going. Back
yeah,
to
and
him.
Same thing, and they keep going back to him. And Pete Townsend. It was great when they asked him. He was he's a very honest guy.
Yes.
And he absolutely – he does a good job of hiding it, but he loves himself.
He does.
Yes.
He tremendously.
Well, he
does.
Really loves himself, but he has mastered not saying it
I
in
love
those words.
Towns, yeah.
I mean, he doesn't go, I love myself, I'm the shit. But he knows exactly what to say where you go, fuck, I almost busted you saying you love yourself. But he said they asked him about – they were talking about Led Zeppelin when they got to Led Zeppelin.
Oh.
Now, you remember, The Who was around a long time before.
The Who have
before.
An interesting history, too, because they were like they were the 60s equivalent of a boy band.
Yeah.
For years,
yeah.
Where they were just a mod band.
Yeah,
a
mod band. Yeah. But they, he asked him about Led Zeppelin, and he
British
said...
British Invasion.
And he said...
mod.
No, they were a mod band. I mean, yeah. That's what they were. Which I had the Who documentary as well, yeah. And I've learned a lot about the Who since then.
Kids are all right.
They asked him about Led Zeppelin when they got to that part, and he said, God. And he just kind of shook his head for a minute. He goes, I really like those guys, and I've hated all their music. I've never liked that band.
Wow.
He said, I wish I could not say it because I just, they're good guys, and I know them, and I like them, but I just have never liked anything they've done.
That's right.
And he goes, and it's always pissed me off because they got so much bigger than The Who. And that's what he said. But it was nice for moments.
He's insane.
It was nice for moments like that. And it was nice to hear like a Tom Petty talk about such a wide range of music that he enjoyed. Because it's not always obviously, you know, at some point everybody wants to act like they only like the obscure, non-successful people. But then you're like, no, at some point you have to admit that you like the stuff that gets really popular, right, or the stuff that's not super innovative. Music has to go up and down to go anywhere. But
I saw the last couple parts of it. It gets a little weird towards the end, only because I think it's easier in hindsight to divvy up stuff like the 60s.
Right.
And then all of a sudden when you get to the... it's easier to divvy up stuff when you don't live through it, and then or you don't remember it as well. Like, for me, it's easy to think of things as all 60s music. Yeah. And then when I think of, you know, I'm like, well, you can't put Nirvana in the Smiths.
You can compartmentalize, you know, something...
It's like, I can't put Nirvana in the Smiths in the same documentary. Right. And I think... it's not a fault of it, because I think it very much makes sense as for the audience as you get closer to the modern that the time frame gets divvied up
a little bit
differently, because obviously you're like, well, let's talk about the 80s, you know, and if you really want to look at the 80s, you look at like, well, yeah, Nirvana was around, the Smiths were around, there's tons of different stuff, but you wouldn't necessarily put all of them into the same hour of talking about it.
Right.
So they do a good job of that, too.
I mean, they pretty much end the documentary the year MTV is created.
Yeah.
They hit bullet points after that, but pretty much when MTV came into it...
The in-depth sort of...
Yeah, when MTV... All of a sudden, music was...
Video killed the radio star?
No. It has less to do with that and more to do with the options out there for everybody. You got to, you know...
Yeah.
Up until that point when there was no access to music, there were, you know... There were eras that you could target three genres of music. This era was British, and this. You know,
that doesn't happen anymore.
Right.
Because
when MTV came into play, it really... Radio. Threw it all in the air and just and
top
said,
top 40 radio didn't dictate what people were listening
right.
to.
Well,
any
I mean,
longer.
It's funny because I read a book about top 40 radio, which is really good, called Something in the Air by Mark something. But he talks a lot about when MTV and when sort of top 40 lost its, you know, when
its grip
in the 80s when you saw all of a sudden bands became popular that didn't have to be on the radio.
Right.
You know, and like that didn't work quite Slayer! The same way. Yeah, it didn't quite work the same way where like bands
they might,
like
they might be giants.
Bands like Nirvana, you know, when Nirvana became a huge hit, surprised a lot of everyone except the people that already knew Nirvana existed, which were a lot of people already kind of knew. It's like thinking about when you're a kid and stuff that you know about that your parents don't know about, like when my dad asked me who the Radioheads are.
Right.
You know, to me, whether or not you like Radiohead, right. If you're a certain age, you know them, their, yeah.
Right.
You know their existence. And there's bands that sort of transcend that.
Right.
You know?
Well, yeah, that's what, like, back at, like, yeah. We got to a point where, I mean, again, you could pinpoint because of radio play, and even the genres that were, I mean, you had your kind of Motown sound right next to kind of your rockabilly rock sound and a British Invasion sound. Now, there's about three genres right there you can nail to an era. Now we get to a point where in the night, like the very beginning of the 90s, how do you talk about the 90s when remembering that? Right after the Smells Like Teen Spirit video, you would see the MC Hammer Addams Family video. Right.
You can't define a decade
by
a genre of music any longer.
No, not even come close. Yeah, I mean, what? Like I said, you could watch Pearl Jam 10 and then watch a Weird Al Yankovic and then like I said, the MC Hammer.
Consumption patterns were... People could sell records without necessarily going through radio, and people that were on the radio could be transcend things or fail, and there was because it used to be that in this, you know, with the whole payola and now, you know, in the 60s and 70s, you got on the radio, that is how you became popular.
Right.
Those equaled each other. Right. There was no such thing as, like, you know,
and
Billboard was,
and during that time as well. I mean, we're not talking, late 60s, early 70s when it actually became about albums.
Yeah,
I mean, it was even a different system as far as. Back then, it was about singles.
Then,
The Who was one of the first bands to start going, this is something called an album.
It's an EP.
Right? It has a theme.
Not just, a concept album. Yeah. Well, then in the 80s, you have the advent of college radio. And that changed a lot of things.
You see the same thing with podcasting and music, or people being able to put out.
Speaking of Radiohead, now they're selling an album online.
The ability of anyone to put out any. If you want to put out music, the only thing stopping you from putting it out to the entire world is whether or not you can make it.
Yeah.
You don't have to make an album. Yeah.
Have to go to studios anymore.
Yeah. You can do it on your own and put it out for anyone. Have you guys ever heard of Tim Fight? He's like a hip hop guy from New York who did an album and just put it out. And it's called Over the Counter Culture. And it's pretty good, but it's just free. He just put it out there. And, I mean, because Radiohead gets big press because Radiohead's popular.
Well,
there's tons of people
yeah.
giving out free albums, and it's it's a complete different way. I mean, it's even more liberating than when college radio came around because it's more liberating also,
because
more confusing.
Because there's still not there's not a barrier of DJs. Because college radio had the same thing. There was still a wall of people you had to get through to get your college.
Making.
There's still somebody making decisions. The internet, podcasting, iTunes, because all you got to do is, I mean, we could sit and record an album right here, right now, submit it to iTunes.
Go get a guitar.
And we'd call it I'm the Shit Label Records or whatever, and we'd be selling, and who knows, it could take off.
I mean,
what a fucking awesome world, you know what I mean?
Crank, you know, his band. Is on MySpace, they got 3 or 4 songs on there, and it's like...
Finishing up their album.
And it's
be on
like,
iTunes.
Yeah. I mean, it's a different world for music, certainly.
I just thought of this, only because we're talking about internet distribution, but I have a friend who got a Kindle.
Oh,
yeah.
What's
I played with the Sony.
The Amazon.
I played with the Sony when it bought.
Oh, the reader. Okay.
Yeah.
Did you see it?
Was telling me about it, and he was like, the book part's really cool, because I can imagine never having to buy a physical book again, and I would be kind of okay with that, because I have a ton of fucking books.
And they're annoying, yeah.
He said, the internet browser's not any big shit. He's like, and there's too many buttons. He says, you don't need a page down and... next page. Yeah. You know, like, when am I going to skip the bottom half of a page?
And they have a whole keyboard.
Yeah, when am I going to skip the bottom half of a page to check out what's on the, you know, like, just, I'll forward through it. But, you know, I was thinking about that. I was like, you know, like, a day where I don't have to actually buy a physical book. And,
And you have bookshelves. In your backpack, you have 50, 100, 300 books in your backpack.
We truly live in a gilded age, my
friend.
We
do.
I played with the Sony one at Borders, which is awesome. You know, I mean, it looks exactly because they've mastered this.
Well, yeah, but that's
digital ink.
Because that was sort of the thing. It was getting it to read like an
actual book. There is no backlight. So to read at night, you have to actually buy a book light, a clip put on there.
Really?
Yeah, there's no.
Easier on your eyes, though.
It is a digital.
I mean, because this is a new. I mean, book readers have been around for about a decade.
Yeah, but again, they've been. The biggest thing is
getting it so you could read
digital
it.
Paper. Digital That's paper. What it is. Yeah, digital
they've
been
paper. Working on 3M, and everybody's been working on digital paper forever.
It actually looks exactly like
paper.
The color of a paper. Yeah. Of a paper of your novel.
Once those things are a little more affordable, I will definitely.
Everybody,
there's no question.
I think the one thing. What's going to. Start topping the sales is they're going to drop they need to drop prices and then they need to make it to where you can because right now the Amazon one is you can only use Amazon's
to get
digital bookstore and Sony's you can only use Sony's
how long before Apple gets involved and makes the iBook
I don't think it'll be long. I mean,
you know what I mean? You have an iBook that is your iTunes holds your music, holds your books.
Right.
You know what I mean? A couple of years, figure that's going to... All right, that'll work.
I mean, it is a great fucking... Like I said, once they open it up to let you buy...
Any
book from anywhere, because now both of them are exclusive to their catalogs. Not that I'm opposed to that, but I don't like... What if you don't have the book I want? That means I can't read that fucking book?
Yeah. Right.
Right? Because
now I have to
you
go
don't
buy
have
a
it.
Book?
Now I got to go buy the book.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny, talking about books, I just finished a book that Chris lent me that was actually really quite good, Starship Troopers.
Oh, I love that book.
Yeah. Have you ever read Starship Troopers? Yeah. You might enjoy
The movie?
It's nothing like the movie.
Like, very different. Before the movie?
Yeah, the book is from the 70s.
Late
50s. Was it late 50s?
Yeah.
That
is good.
It's who's the author?
Robert Heinlein.
Yeah, Heinlein, yeah.
It's really cool because, I've seen the movie too. And
I actually like the movie, but it's nothing.
It's very different because the book isn't so much obsessed with the actual fighting the aliens. It's much more about...
Characters?
It's about Politics. Characters and it's about... I really like the debate about... it's much more about the idea of public service to vote. Like, what does it mean to be a citizen? What does
Earning
it mean?
Citizenship.
Like, what does it mean to count yourself as part of, you know, a community? Does it mean... Do you get that automatically? Do you have to earn it?
That.
Like, what do you have to do to earn it? Like, what it, and I was very impressed by the book. I wasn't a huge... I thought the movie was, I think, exceedingly campy.
Yeah. Yes,
where,
absolutely.
You know,
it's about shooting,
and they
bugs,
they touch
cool.
on that in the beginning of the movie. The
but they don't go back to it.
No, they once they get to the the movie's nothing.
I
like
was
the book,
it's
really,
pretty sure
I mean,
it's like 200 pages, yeah, it's very quick. And the one thing I love it when I read a book, and it's like sci-fi or something technical about it, and they talk using a language that I would believe is believable for their situation, but I still understand it. Mm-hmm. Like, I hate science fiction books that are either too hard to understand or
overly simple.
Like, overly, like, simple. Like, really? This is, like, what they would talk about?
Yeah, when they're talking about, like, the jumpsuits and that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, it does a very good job of balancing it all, so it... You know, reads well and it's understandable, but it also fits that world.
Give it to Scotty because I think Scotty would enjoy
it. I'll give
it
to you.
Give it to me, baby.
I will jam you.
I liked. Speaking of TV, we've been watching. I've been on watching a lot of the Discovery Channel, HD Discovery Channel lately.
Yeah.
They've had like the last week though. It's been a bunch of
Planet
like,
Earth.
It's been a lot of cryptozoology stuff on there. I watched.
You got your issues of proof out.
Yeah, the Hunt for Bigfoot. They had a whole big scientific...
Listen, I am so fucking pissed that the Discovery Channel wastes its time with a show about trying to find Bigfoot. He doesn't fucking exist.
Well, it wasn't necessarily trying to find Bigfoot. Basically, what they did is they took whatever evidence they could find over the last 40 years, and they put it in the hands of a dozen real scientists.
Yeah.
Not... You know,
pseudoscientists.
Yeah, not crypto. You know, anthropologists, forensic scientists, real scientists.
Yeah,
had them do everything they could with the data,
don't
and
they
then
have
come up with
to do?
Come up with. Well, I don't. Somebody paid them. I don't know. And then come up with their conclusions. There was a dozen scientists.
Scientists of money though, because only Scotty is a scientist.
Well,
of money.
And love
scientists of life.
I mean, these were highly regarded. You know, scientists, real scientists, not you know. And out of the dozen at the end, they all, you know, it was about an hour, it was an hour long show, and you know, they had this guy who's like one of the most, the foremost experts on fingerprinting.
Where this is going.
I know, I know.
Tom just.
But at the end of it, so they all go, they go back to each one of them after all of their studies and their findings and everything, and wanted their conclusions. And out of the dozen, like nine of them all concluded that there is a North American ape running around. I swear to God, Tom.
Why do we have why do we have evidence of every creature on Earth on film?
That's not true.
Okay.
They believe, scientists believe there are about 10 million species we don't know exist.
Here's the thing, though.
And they find new ones every month.
I can look on fucking Google Earth and see Chris's mom. I can see Chris's mom stay inside her house about Bigfoot, who's like 8 feet fucking tall. Yes,
they're
and
nocturnal.
It's not like he lives in.
They're nocturnal.
He doesn't live like on some remote island. He lives in the Pacific Northwest, which, as far as I know, has a ton of people hiking and living around.
Yeah, that's all they fucking do out there.
Hey, I'm not claiming that there is
these
a North American ape.
These are the same scientists that would waste their time taking
I'm
money
just saying,
to talk about
you know, renowned scientists conclude.
How do you know they're renowned? They,
well, yeah. One guy is,
he goes,
you know,
I am renowned scientist. Bigfoot is real.
Chicago. The Museum of
Phoenix University.
No. None of them were. No, it was like, it was all major colleges, professors at major colleges. And no, these were, I mean.
People at the University of Chicago still get C's.
Yeah, I suppose.
They don't all get A's.
They were
man.
Professors. They were not. I don't know, Tom. I'm just saying. And then the next
nine
one.
Out of the 12.
And then I watched the Human Hobbit, which was no.
Tom has
you
left.
You need a fucking hobby, man.
Tom has left the boat.
The Human Hobbit. Well, those were actual anthropologists.
Yeah, the thing that bothers me about that more is that like when a scientific discovery is made. And someone whoever does the marketing for scientific discoveries is like, we found tiny people. What do we say about them? Let's call them hobbits. Lord of the Rings is popular.
Why not? Scientists need funding, man. They gotta pimp their shit.
I just see a scientist like in front of a bunch of people going, and we found some hobbits. Nine out of 12 of them.
And then 12 of them
said there's a ring that will rule them all. Based on evidence.
I finished it all up on with American Loch Ness.
American Loch Ness. Huh?
Yeah, there's an American Loch Ness.
It's funny because we actually would call it Loch Ness, but we don't have a lake
Ness.
Called.
We don't have Loch. Yeah,
we don't have the Loch.
It was. He's actually called Champ because it's Lake Champlain in Massachusetts. I don't even know where the hell it was at. I didn't pay that. That one was on
was
in the
Madison?
Background.
No, Madison, Wisconsin.
No, it was somewhere on the East Coast.
This is going to add so much more credence to the terrible movies that I'm getting ready to talk.
Oh,
about.
Oh Jesus Christ! Don't.
Go ahead.
No.
Oh, come on.
I don't care. I got nothing to say about them.
Anyone that's been to the forum the last few weeks, I started a thread. I've been wanting to catch up on some 70s movies. I think it's a great era, a great decade for movie making.
There's no question, and you picked the worst possible
films. I'm starting at the bottom,
from
and I'm working
that
my way up.
What movies did you pick?
I'm starting with some 70s dystopian films, and film is giving these a lot of credit, maybe undue. Start out with Soylent Green, which I had never seen before, and it's
spoilers.
Yeah.
Baby people.
So Charlton Heston. It's a look into the year 2024, I think,
we're
and
fucked.
Yeah, we're screwed, pal, because the world is overpopulated and there's not enough food. There's like 20 or 40 million people that live in New York City.
How many people live in New York City right now?
Like 22.
Holy shit.
Is it?
No, wait. No. In Manhattan, on the island of Manhattan, there's like a little over a million, I think. But New York, I mean, that's,
yeah, there's like 40 million people. There's people like, you know, they live like sleep in like stairwells, you know, and
they should move out to the suburbs.
you know, Madison's probably not overcrowded.
Yeah.
Well, they can't go there; it's against the law.
Oh shit!
Because the budget for the movie wouldn't allow for any other sets.
you know, that's one of the things that I like about these 70s movies is that, you know, they're certainly not high on special effects. and they're pretty, you know, the you watch them and you're like, okay, this is how I would set up this shot if I was out with my friends making a movie. And sometimes the simplicity of that is kind of nice. And the story is pretty straightforward. It's, you know, for the time, pretty cool. Charlton Heston is good in it, and Soylent Green is people.
I've always wanted to do a stage show where I do a scene called the Charlton Heston School of Acting, where there's two techniques. There's seething, and then there's screaming.
Yes.
People.
You either talk like this, or you talk like this! Yeah. There's only the, it's like the Jack Bauer, like, character study. Like, either you talk like this,
there's
or you
nothing more important right now than my family.
Or you or there's nothing more important than my family! Yeah. You just one of the two. But Charlton Heston does it well.
Yeah. There was this whole culture of movies in the 70s, and they call them, you know, dystopian films. And
why in the 70s of all times? Was it Carter?
I don't know.
Because it was all like, fuck, man, Vietnam's bullshit.
Probably was, yeah.
Well, let's say these all, you know, distant or not so distant looks into the future, and these anti-utopian. It's like Logan's Run is a dystopian film, and you've got, you know, stuff like Soylent Green, and then the other one that I watched, A Boy and His Dog, which
Planet of the Apes
is dystopian. Sure,
for some people that would be God a paradise.
Goddamn apes!
Some people that's a paradise.
If you're an ape, would be. You know, Blade Runner probably goes
ape
into that category.
Must not kill apes.
The other one that I watched this week was A Boy and His Dog, starring a very, very young Don Johnson as
nice
as Albert, as his dog. His telepathic dog refers to him. It's about
Jesus Christ, man.
This is after World War IV.
Whoa, that is bold. Not fuck three, dude.
We don't even talk about
three. We go right to four.
Skipped right to World War
III. Three was for pussies.
This one goes to four.
It's extreme.
Why? Why do we need three?
It's Don Johnson and his telepathic dog, Blood.
That sounds good.
And they basically scour the desert countryside looking for food and trying to con people or steal basically their way to survival. And through an interesting turn of events, Don Johnson finds this woman, which he's always on the lookout for some female companionship, finds this woman and
the poon.
finds out that this woman actually lives in an underground city, Topeka, and he follows her. She runs off. He ends up following her into the underground city, mm-hmm. and it is like this kind of very Timothy Leary like paradise.
Everybody's on LSD.
Everyone's hanging out with people too young for them.
Trying to stay relevant for like, way too long. Sorry, Tim.
It's like this fake sense of peace or happiness. Everyone, and it's 70s, so it's really weird. Everyone in this town has their faces are almost painted white with rosy cheeks. And that's
like
almost
Japanese,
almost like yeah, like kabuki. Almost.
Kabuki,
and it's to show that I this is my interpretation. It's showing
the metaphor.
That the metaphor is that their happiness is very much painted on because it's really like this very
bleak.
Religious zealots that are using religion to control the society. And what Don Johnson comes to find out whenever they capture him.
It's all about pussy.
Well, yeah. It always has been for Don.
Oh, he wishes. Pussy.
As Snoop Dogg has said on the comment on the extras to the Scarface disc, Pussy Don got him killed.
Because they capture him and they inform him that all of the men can't reproduce.
Oh,
the women are fertile, the men are not. So every
that's perfect
for so every generation.
That's a utopian movie, motherfucker.
So every generation they bring a man from the top side down.
This sounds like it's becoming a porno.
Yeah, yeah. No shit. I think I've had dreams about this kind of shit before.
And Don Johnson finds out about this and thinks that is a cable. Very good idea. Well, and until they cut to the next scene, and he's hooked up to a machine much like they would use to milk a cow, yes. And they are bride by bride, have all of the virgin women in the town are lined up, and they're marrying them as they collect deposits from Don Johnson.
And they said, don't worry, when you're done, we will give you a hot pink T-shirt and a white sports jacket and send you on your way.
Actually, listen, you want to come check out our fucking machine? And he's like, yeah, it's going to be awesome. And then he gets to, he's like, oh,
that's a barrel
awesome.
With a hole in it. What?
Actually, they inform him that he's...
Are you having troubles at home, Chris?
No.
Because hey, weird movie picks all
okay.
of a sudden.
Well, look, wait. I mean, but here, I wanted to mention this. Chris got a brand new big screen, flat screen television.
Fucking picks?
50 inch. And these are the fucking movies that he's picking
listen
to watch
to the
on it.
Description of this. Chris, I think Chris does a much classier job than the back of this does.
Oh, he's up-talked it a little.
Yeah, he has. Critically acclaimed and an inspiration to the Mad Max movies. A Boy and His Dog is truly a wild, kinky, and unique cinematic adventure. It sounds like a porno.
Yeah, it's a skin flick. It
sounds like a
Cinemax. Jesus
And then
Christ.
The last half hour is him fucking 80 different women. But his dog has a mask on.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
By the way, based on a Harlan Ellison story.
Oh
then
there
it's
you
good.
Go.
So way to
it's good. It's good then.
Way to use that big TV though.
Yeah, hey, no shit.
Well, and I'm not.
You know what it is? Marta has all the good movies and has kicked him out.
He's on
with
nice
the
nice
13 TV. Yeah, the 13 inch black and white
is a great train robbery.
He's got to watch.
She's up there
scan.
Watching Lord of the Rings and the Matrix trilogies.
Scott, okay, you know they have like the aspect ratios and everything on duty.
2-1.
Read that and tell me what exactly that means.
2-3-5-1.
2-3-5.
Don't watch it.
2-3-5-1 widescreen.
Widescreen.
So what does that mean?
It's full screen format with a widescreen box in the middle.
Yes.
Even on your widescreen TV, it will still
only
be in the middle.
On a 16:9 TV, sucks.
It's about as big as your cell phone window.
No, dude, it fits totally with the dystopia.
Yes, very bleak.
Oh, wait a second. Did this person... Wait, the Chicago Tribune said, a cross between George Orwell and Mel Brooks?
Yeah.
It seems like they didn't get it.
But I like how they didn't actually... There's nothing actually saying that's a good quote because there's an exclamation point at the end. Right before it was like, this is a piss poor attempt at a cross between.
So right now there's one person in the audience going, it's my favorite.
I love that movie.
Fuck you guys.
I my life.
Tom, take it home and watch it for me.
I will.
Watch it. I enjoyed them both. They're goofy. They're silly, but
I'll watch it when Michael
really
Bay remakes it.
My girlfriend's in St. Louis. My girlfriend's in...
You got nothing but time.
When he gets hooked up to the fucking machine, he stands up and it pans around him as he looks around. And then a bunch of doves.
Yeah. A double pop-up.
Hey, to redeem,
a Hummer will
fly. Doves are not bad, though.
Shanty town.
To redeem my TV, I did watch the HD version of Bourne Ultimatum, which was...
Ooh, that's pretty.
Freaking awesome.
Very nice.
He jumps across.
I imagine your
window.
Netflix queues a bunch of shit like the Great Train Robbery from 1914. Like
Throw Mama
a bunch,
from the Train.
Yeah. Caddyshack.
Seven Samurai.
Oh.
You guys want to read some emails? I got a few handfuls.
Yeah,
not too many.
Not too many.
Yeah.
All right, I'm feeling loose. Wrap it
up. I'm feeling loose.
Phil, for a second while I get pull it up here.
Glad I could bring enjoyment to.
Oh,
you.
That was.
What's
that
the
was...
worst big screen movie? I can't wait to watch Blair Witch Project on my giant screen.
On my giant screen. Well, hell, that no, it's. Yeah,
good
what would
movie.
Be a really really good one? Like from like one of those bad 80s. Like, I can't wait to watch Beverly
oh,
Hills
not...
Cop. On my 15-inch plasma with ambient light.
Nosferatu.
Well, still, that'd still probably be cooler. What's another bad 80s movie?
Weekend at Bernie's.
Oh, yeah, there you go. You're a mannequin.
Soul Man.
Here's what I've got Streets of Fire in my Netflix queue.
Streets of Fire. Oh, that's at least a
Transylvania 6500.
Jesus Christ.
That's bad.
It's bad. All right, this
Can't
one is
wait to watch season 1 of Seinfeld.
I'm gonna watch Mama's House.
Mama's Family.
Mama's Family, man. That's what it was.
Vicky
family.
Lawrence was so funny on that big screen.
Vicky Lawrence.
big screen. Big was in life.
All right. This is from Mike Jasorka. Mike Jasorka. said, I just wanted to tell you all. I just wanted to tell all you guys that you rock the boat. I listen to you fellas ramble on while I'm drawing my own comics, and I have a blast doing so. Keep up the great work, and I hope to be in your area someday to stop in and say, what's up? All the best, Mike J. And you can see Mike J's comics at comicspace.com/bombshellcomics.
Do we rock the boat like we rock, or do we rock the boat like,
we cause
hey,
trouble.
Fuck you, you're stop the man, I'm going to rock the boat.
Or is it rock the boat like we just escaped from a boat and I wish that guy wasn't rocking this boat?
Right. Or did he mean to put we rock the vote?
Oh,
oh yeah.
It is an election year.
Yes, it is.
Sal and I were talking about how bad reality TV is going to get this year. That we came up with the concept of the
primary survivor,
electoral survivor, where we through reality TV gradually vote off each candidate.
I would love to see Ron Paul versus Wolf from American Gladiators. That show's not fake.
The next one, no. What are you talking about? Don't burst my bubble. This one is from Scott Dodds. He said, I just got the definitive edition of Queen and Country, and holy crap, this book is amazing. Why didn't you tell me about it before?
Are you fucking kidding me?
Just kidding. Oh. I read the whole thing in one day. Next time I'll take your word sooner. Thanks.
Yeah, so listen to us when we tell you shit.
Yeah, when we tell you something's
people
good.
People are always like, I can't believe you were right.
We'll come rock your fucking boat.
Yeah. First we're gonna board your boat, and then we're gonna rock.
Then I'm gonna vote to get your boat rocked, motherfucker.
And once we get a quorum and we get enough of a majority, we will rock it.
Oh, this one's going to rock the boat here.
Shit.
This is from Nick Zinn.
Uh-oh.
Said, just a few comments on older shows.
Oh my God.
I love that Scotty mentioned the Joe Pitt books by Charlie Houston. I read Already Dead, then discovered he was writing Moon Knight. It's cool to hear others are reading his novels. I was really disappointed in I Love You, Beth Cooper. Talking it up so much led me to believe this would be the best thing I've read in a while. I didn't begin to enjoy it till the party by the rich girl's house and was scratching my head over what you guys thought was laugh out loud funny so early on. With such a high recommendation, I was let down by the story.
I wonder how old this guy is.
I have no idea.
I say that in that everybody that we know that has read it, that I've read, like friends have absolutely loved it. And the age thing I was asking, I mean, he very well could be our age and just not. But to me, something about Beth Cooper brought me back to all the movies that I grew up
on. The 80s John Hughes
movies.
But I also, and it's funny because his email echoes something I told you too, I was saying that I thought the book was funny, but I thought it was sort of pedestrian up until around that part. And then it had a little bit more heart. But I thought the first part was still funny. Just I was sort of like, yeah, this is good, but not, you know.
Well, I mean,
I liked it from page one.
Yeah, I thought the first chapter was just awesome, amazingly written, brilliant, funny. Yeah.
The prose were inventive, I thought.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for the graphic novel.
I did literally laugh out loud reading the whole thing. I don't know how many times I did laugh, and I don't generally do that with books. There's very few times that in a book.
What's this emailer's name?
Nick Zinn.
Nick Zinn. Write in a simple email and just tell us your age. I'm just curious.
Just curious.
I would. There's something that makes me feel that he may be a little younger.
A little younger. If he missed
John Hughes era, but I could be wrong. Maybe he's seen them all and he just didn't.
It's not his thing, and that's
fine too. But
I think it's also perception too. It's like when somebody. I mean. When somebody hypes something up and then you go into it's gonna, you know, you're almost inevitably going to be let down. I was the same way with Superbad. You know, it's like people hype that up so much and I watch and I'm like, oh, I didn't think it was hilarious, and so I was kind of let down. I was expecting to be laughing my ass off through the whole thing, and I didn't.
Well, I've got almost 50 emails from other people who went and read, from fans that listen to the show and go to my website. And I've gotten about 50 emails of people that were like, thank you. Even Newsarama, all the people at Newsarama were like, we all read the – or no, an animation studio was like, everybody in our studio read the book.
Yeah, that was –
everybody's loving
the guys from Frisky Dingo. Frisky Dingo emailed us and said that.
Well, Nick, tell us how old you are.
Your address,
motherfucker.
Not that it's bad or good.
I think he goes on.
Yeah, it goes on a little bit. I noticed a bit of jazzy background music in the Douglas Walk interview. Maybe you have been doing this for a while, but it was a nice compliment to the piece. Would you like to comment on that?
Yes, that was because there was a thunderstorm in Chicago that night, and my dogs were kind of freaking out.
Dogs were barking.
and they were pacing in my bedroom, and I put the jazz music underneath the interview so you didn't hear the...
It was a beautiful accident. Last, I was wondering what happened to all the Elvis references that were made so frequently in past shows. Keep up the great work.
Well
it could only be funny for a minute. Yeah. Yeah.
We've moved on.
There's a saying, something about a dead horse or something.
Meeting one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Killing
there's
it.
A saying, yeah. I think Jackie Gleason said, you beat a dead horse until someone cries, and you beat it one more time.
You'll go to hell.
Yeah, you go to hell, but you'll make the devil laugh.
There used to there used to be... Used
Gleason was drunk?
This was towards the end.
This,
yeah. Hey, we used to make jokes about Tom having affection for monkeys or apes about every other...
And now he just read an ape book, so maybe
and that probably went on longer than it should have.
Yeah, probably. All right, next is David.
That's storyline.
David said, first, I enjoy the show. I especially enjoy the interviews with older creators like Denny O'Neill and Roy Thomas. Second, thanks for including the name of your opening song in the fact. Just wanted to let you know that the Hellraisers is available for purchase on iTunes in case any other listeners were looking for it. Thanks again, David.
Thanks.
So, yeah, that's the name of the tune, the Hellraisers, if and anybody wants to buy it.
I'd love talking to Roy Thomas. I could have talked to Roy Thomas for hours.
Did you want him to adopt you?
No.
Oh.
No, I feel like that. I wouldn't want to be that close to him.
Yeah, and Denny was awesome. That's probably the highlight of my year. He was a lot of fun. A lot of younger creators coming up soon. So we'll get
babies.
Back to that.
We're interviewing babies.
Yes, we'll get back to the veteran creators.
Baby creators. Next is
favorite baby creator. Favorite children creators.
Chris Prunkle. He said, you might have been informed of this previously, but your theme music is the same as Something Weird Videos. They are a company that releases cult movies to DVDs such as Blood Feast, Gore Gore Girls, Stripperama, and such. I was watching their DVD of trailers last night and found it interesting that they were using the same music. Is this just a weird coincidence, or did you guys plan it this way? Just wondering.
It depends on what you think. If you think it's cool that we planned it that way, then yes. If you don't, then it was pure chance.
No, it was pure chance.
Or planned.
Or planned by a higher power, maybe.
Yeah.
Sometimes God
one-eyed baby Jesus.
Yeah.
One-eyed baby Jesus. No, I don't know.
Seeing eye towards us.
I found it on a website about cult movies, so it may have been their website, but I don't think it was this Something Weird Videos.
Quit touching his shaft.
God damn. Oh. Ow.
God damn, this belt's too tight.
But I found it on a website, and I just thought it was cool.
Cool.
And that's it.
So. Nice.
Cool.
All right, one
Chris,
more.
Chris, come listen to this.
We got more. This is from our anonymous Brit again.
Satan.
Oh. And he said, hello, Around Comics. I couldn't resist bothering you again. This is anonymous Brit from Northampton. I want to remain anonymous due to my reclusive nature, and I don't want anyone to cast a spell on me. You know, bad things can happen in life.
Wow.
Ambrosia's a motherfucker. Yeah.
If you're not careful, like someone making a movie out of your comic. I hate that. My question is, are there any other supremely masterful comic books, apart from Watchmen, From Hell, V for Vendetta, Leave Extraordinary Gentlemen, Halo Jones, Promethea, Tom Strong, Top 10, Killing Joke, Swamp Thing.
Oh, I get it. I get the joke now.
You don't need to answer that since I doubt there are. Oh, I forgot. Pedo Pan. Sorry, I meant Lost Girls. No offense, but I have to say Pedophilia Pan, I guess.
Oh.
No offense, but I have to say I hate listening to your podcast because I hate comic book fans since they are all adult males. Don't you know comic books are meant for kids? I previously asked if there are any spiritual comics. This is because I'm a religious guy. Actually, I worship my own god, which conveniently is myself. Who needs a crucifix when you have a mirror and a god-like beard?
Your
anyway,
fucking point coming?
I'd better stop typing since my hand
we
is all bent up.
We get it. You're
like
pretending to be Alan Moore, all right?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
There's about five dead horses laying in that guy's house right now.
Due to excessive kundali masturbation? Kundalini? Masturbation? Goodbye. That was it.
Steve Kundalini, he was famous for... he invented...
Switch masturbation?
He was the first, you know, he was the first person to record the sound of him masturbating on a phonogram disc. Look it up.
And that's... There was one more email from Vicious Smith, but it was about kids being left out from DC Marvel. It was kind of a long thing.
We should have read that instead of that bad Alan.
Yeah.
Well, I can read it, but...
We'll
use that as a topic. If it's something we can actually get into a discussion
yeah,
about.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's more so.
Instead of having like a night at the improv.
Okay. And that's
Those are emails?
Those are our emails.
Hey, you know, we got a couple voicemails. I think we'll save them for next week because we've been yammering a lot.
I'm tired.
But
so sleepy.
I need to write down that.
It's been a long time since I complained about being sleepy.
Voicemail there. Go to the home aroundcomics.com and
our phone number.
The
it is 1-888-977-5903. Call us.
Leave questions for the answer.
Leave questions for the answer.
And you could just like talk to me.
You could just leave,
be like, hey, man.
Leave Scotty a cool message.
What's up, man?
Hey, what's up?
What are you doing?
Good job not smoking.
Yeah, good job on the quit smoking, Chief.
Is it me you're looking for?
Hello.
And then Scotty is making a sculpture of my head.
Out of Starburst.
That's crazy.
Hello. Is it me you're looking for? And then I'll be like, shut up, man. I'm not into stuff like that. I like trannies, but not that shit.
Of your...
All right,
remember to go to aroundcomics.com where you can download and print out our LCS Challenge flyer. Ask your comic shop manager or owner if they will display it in the store. If they do, send us an email and we'll mention you in the store on the show as well as post it on our site. Become a friend of the program today.
Cool.
iTunes reviews, huh?
Oh, yeah. Go do sexual stuff to Chris by leaving an iTunes review.
You've really kind of slacked off.
I wasn't prepared. Usually I have about 5 minutes.
Here you go.
I've went through a lot of them now. I'm running out.
All right. I'm going to spell them this time.
Then don't try and do it.
Just
do it straight.
As you walk into the room and you notice Chris, and all of a sudden your pants drop to your ankles, and it's hot.
Come on, there's an easy
Chris
one.
Chris looks it.
There's a pretty obvious one. If you'd like to hook Chris up to a fucking machine.
Oh,
that
was good.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah. I was
Sal
saying.
Won.
Yeah,
Sal
right.
failed at smoking, but he won.
Yeah, he won that one. Sir,
so
win.
thanks to Razorburn 2021 and DC Purr for fucking Chris through a
dystopian 70s.
Fuck machine.
None of the men, all the men are shooting blanks on iTunes, so Chris has to be hooked up to the
once a generation.
Yeah.
It's funny because
deposit your iTunes review.
Oh. Yeah. To give birth to Chris's happiness.
I think Razorburn finished his review by saying, oh yeah, Chris, you like that?
No! Oh! All right.
Jesus
yeah.
Christ, that's disgusting.
All right, this episode is sponsored by InStock Trades, -Sal.
InStockTrades.com is offering this month's reading selection, the originals, to Around Comics listeners. For an amazing 35% off the cover, get your copy today for only $11.69 for the soft cover, or $16.22 for the hard cover.
Fuck machine!
Check out the Eisner-winning graphic novel by Dave Gibbons, and then listen to our discussion in early February. InStock Trades offers a huge selection of collected editions you want and you need.
Fuck machine!
All great discounted prices, and remember that all orders over $50 ship for free.
I like your fuck machine.
I'm just leaving some space before I mention Hero Initiative. I'm just leaving a few moments.
Good thinking, Tom.
And we are proud to help support the Hero Initiative. Hero creates a financial safety net for yesterday's creators who need emergency medical aid financial
support. You ever know that you're my hero.
An avenue back into paying work. It's a chance for all of us to give back something to the people who have given us so much enjoyment. For more information, visit www.heroinitiative.org or call 310-909-7809 and ask to be hooked up to the copulation machine. I cleaned it up.
Very nice.
Chris, what do we got coming up Monday?
Well, in addition to all the wonderful segments that you've come to know and love, like the Quiet Panelologist at Work, your wonderful news segment, the Answer Man, and others, we visit with Mark Sable and Robbie Rodriguez.
Fantastically
cool. The upcoming original graphic novel Haze. You also know Robbie from Maintenance, and Mark Sable worked on Grounded.
Is an awesome book.
It is an awesome book. And also talked with, excuse me as I hiccup there.
Jeez.
Also got to visit with
Fuck
with,
machine.
Also got to visit with Jerry Duggan, who you may know from as one of the co-writers for last year's breakout hit, The Last Christmas, and now he's writing a very different book called Infinite Horizon with Phil Noto on art. So that's what's coming up on Monday's show.
Oh, God! Fuck!
I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today. Tom, Cater, Scotty Young, Sal, and the Fuck Machine.
And the Fuck Machine.
Thank Mark for hosting us, as always, here at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles.
Everyone have... I don't have anything left.
I'm dry! Let me out of the fuck machine!
Everyone have a fantastic week and weekend. We'll be back again on Monday.
Fuck Machine's trademarked by Aaron Comics.
In the meantime,
in between time,
we'll be everywhere in
and around comics.
Don't say it.
Intercourse.
Machine.
Intercourse contraption.
If you would like to suggest a topic, send us your comments, or are interested in becoming a panel member, email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. Music for the show provided by the Podshow Podsafe Music Network, music.podshow.com. Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and do not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. All content of this episode is the sole property of Around Comics. Around Comics is a pipe dream production. Copyright 2008. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next time when the panel will change, but our mission will stay the same, bringing you the very best news, reviews, and opinions in and around comics. Why you got my left?